Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is the Recruiting Animal. You know, I can understand why Britney went crazy. When you're famous, you got a lot of people bugging you. They snap pictures wherever you go, and they try to catch you doing stupid things just so they can bring you down. I got to tell you, I've only been in this business for a few weeks now, and I've really had some bad experiences myself already. I like to go to Starbucks in the morning just to sit and think, you know, be by myself. But in the last week, I can't tell you how many people have come up to me and said, "Hey, are you the Recruiting Animal?" I said, "How do you know?" They said, "Oh, I recognize your voice." They recognized my voice. What did I say? How's Blend? I told you. Kind of crazy. The baristas now, they're bugging me to get them some FaceTime with Jason Warner. He used to be the chief recruiter there at Starbucks. But I told them he doesn't work here anymore. Leave me alone. I'm getting pretty worried because I can see the writing on the wall. Trust me. Trust me. Trust me. It's lonely at the top. I know, because I'm the Recruiting Animal, and this is the Recruiting Animal Show. And in a second, I'm not going to play you the music because it didn't come on. So, anyway, let's move on. I'm going to introduce our guest today. But first, I'm going to sing you a little song. You know this one? To know him is to love him. Just to see him smile makes my life worthwhile. To know him is to love him. And I do. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. That's a great song, eh? But we got a guy here today whose only goal in life is to prove that to know him is not to love him. According to Mr. Mustache, he's our guest. Knowing and loving are two different things. And I can see he's got a bit of a point. If you see me taking money from your wallet, you might not like me after that. At the same time, however, if I robbed a bank and went to prison, I could get Anthony J. Meany, a fellow recruiter, to boot up the show on Wednesday and call me at the jail. And you know what? I think we'd have more listeners than I do now. So I'm going to ask our guest a question about that. And you know what? I'm not going to go on with our introduction too much longer. Let's see if he's there, okay? Mr. Mustache, are you there?
Mr. Animal? I didn't bring a song. I'm sorry.
You know what? Let me just see if they gave me my music yet. One second.
The werewolf is neither man nor wolf, but a satanic creature with the worst qualities of both. And do you expect me to believe that a man so afflicted actually becomes a wolf under the influence of the full moon? I'm afraid, sir, that I gave up my belief in goblins, witches, personal devils, and werewolves at the age of 6.
I feel better now that I... Hold on a sec, though, okay? I'm going to do the introduction. I was going to put it aside, but I'll go ahead. You know, when I don't get the music, it puts me off. Richard Becker is a communications consultant. He also teaches a course at Las Vegas University, and I know for a fact that his students don't like me. They think I'm rude, and you know what? I don't care, because to me, they're just a bunch of punks. I hope they're listening right now, because, you know, I often wonder, what kind of students are there anyway? You know, Las Vegas University, it just doesn't even sound real. I mean, the classes, I can only imagine being, in a casino. I'm sorry to say it, Richard, but Las Vegas University doesn't sound real. I imagine the busboys coming in and out of the kitchen listening to you while they're eating lunch. But you can tell me, you can contradict me, it's in your hands now.
Sure. Where I teach is actually the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and I'm part of the educational outreach program. So I teach continuing education courses, specifically writing and public relations, and I also do an editing class. Sort of a little side thing that I do to help bring up the industry.
So you're giving back to the community, in other words.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I do to give back to the community.
Do you live in Las Vegas?
Yes, I do.
You know, how long have you been there?
My family originally moved here in 1979.
Oh, okay. Well, you know.
I left for a while and then came back in 91 and started a company.
Did you ever meet any of the members of the Rat Pack while they were still alive?
Yes.
Oh, really? I was kidding. Who? Who did you meet?
I met Frank Sinatra.
No way.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
So, well, one of the things that I along my journeys in developing a what was originally just a writing services company, I worked in for a lot of the entertainment publications. So that put me in a place where I could interview a lot of different famous people and work with them in many different ways.
So you met Frank? Sammy?
No, not Sammy.
Peter Lawford?
Huh? No.
Joey Bishop?
Nope.
Okay, okay. Here's another question for you. Las Vegas, they have a lot of showgirls there working in the nightclubs, right?
Yeah.
So I imagine there's a lot better than average people walking the streets of that city. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. Once you get off the strip, it changes a bit. It becomes
really?
Like any other community.
You're not married to a showgirl by any chance?
No, I'm not. Actually, I married somebody from Rhode Island.
That's pretty far away.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, I have some questions for you based on some of the things you've written, but do you want to give a little introduction to your topic yourself before I go ahead?
No, go ahead, and we'll go from there.
Okay, well, you
back
know,
into it.
You said on your site, not on the Recruiting Bloggers, but on Copyright Inc.,
mm-hmm.
you said that it's not good to apologize too much. You gave the example of JetBlue. You said, you know, what they're doing is just keeping everyone's focus on a car wreck. Our attention spans are really short. What they should do is let them move on. But I have to tell you, when someone screws with me and they apologize, if they just say, I'm sorry, you know, it's time to move on, I hate them for it. I want them to suffer, and I want to see them when they're apologizing. I want to see the pain, you know. I want them to really match my emotion, and I didn't get that from your posting.
You know, I think they did apologize. They spent over, you know, $30 million trying to make this better. I think they just probably overreached in their apology, and they need to start. The longer that they apologize, the harder it'll be to shift off the topic. You know, generally speaking, if you apologize for something that you've done because you recognize it's wrong, and you actually provide restitution as they did, you can pretty much move on from that.
Okay, so
I think it's starting to drift into something else. If JetBlue continues on its path where it's continually apologizing for the same thing, all it does is elevate the negative impressions that we have about JetBlue, because that's what we think about. We don't hear any other messages. It doesn't matter what they're doing.
So it becomes like Edsel.
Yeah, exactly. And they could, if they continue, the longer they continue, the longer it'll take for them to get back.
Okay, but what about responding to criticism in general? I mean, when do you ignore it? We've been talking a lot about Jobster, but I'm just thinking about when, let's say, you know, we're headhunters, most of the people listening to the program. When you screw up and you're in business, and it's, you know, not a really big public thing, but you're just dealing with your clients, what do you tell them? Is there a communications approach, a standard approach that you do for something like that?
Well, I'm not really big on standard approaches. I look at it more as a process that you sort of, you know, you think through, because every case scenario is a little bit different. You have to recognize, you know, a lot of different factors on who you're talking to, especially when dealing with critics. Is the critic somebody that's well-read? Is the critic somebody who I should pay attention to? Is there traction on the story that they're publishing?
How can you tell? I'm not talking, you know what, this is a little different. Maybe I'm
well, it changes as it goes on. If you take, are you familiar with the Spocko incident in ABC Radio?
No.
Okay.
I don't think I am.
There was a blogger that started to take one of the stations up in San Francisco to task by publishing little clips that were largely taken out of context. And for a long time, nobody cared. And they ignored it, and the world was fine.
Were they funny? Can you give us an example?
The clips?
Yeah.
No, they were a little bit, I'd say, borderline hateful clips.
Okay.
Because it was a conservative talk show. I don't have that one pulled up in front of me, so I'm just kind of going off memory.
Okay. Yeah.
It was a conservative talk show. They'd say a few things about different politicians and talk about, you know, perhaps executing them, things like that, within a context. So he had taken some of the clips out of that context, and they become hate speech. And he was publishing those on his blog.
Right.
And had the station, KSFO, it just simply ignored that. Everything probably would have been fine. But ABC, who owns the radio station, decided to take some action and had him had his blog taken down by the provider.
Mm-hmm.
That created a public relations nightmare, because now it was a question of not is this guy a valid critic, but it was a question of are we censoring free speech? And I don't really believe that Spock would deserve as much attention over it as he received. And some people certainly would disagree with me.
Yeah, but I never heard of him. Is he a famous blogger now? How did this, you know, this...
He had 5 minutes of fame. It's pretty much died out because
okay,
they...
Okay, so the question we asked sort of... Let me just say, is all publicity good publicity? And, in fact, in his case, it was good for a few minutes, but no longer than that. Is that what
for him, and for the station, it was not good.
Well, does everyone remember it?
Well, I think they've pretty much moved on from that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he's still going, you know, taking it to task, and he still has his blog, and... But his readership, if you track things like Blog Pulse, et cetera, it's really dropped off because there's not an issue. I mean, the issue was a blogger being taken off the net, and that nobody really cared about the issue as much, although it did, like I said, it received some traction. Now, so during that evolution, you have to consider on the front end, it was somebody to ignore.
Uh-huh.
And then they didn't ignore him. They actually took legal action.
So
I should say the threat of legal action. And that resulted in something that turned into too big news for 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
They should have just ignored him all along.
Let's come to a case that we all know about, we've been talking about, with Jobster.
Yeah.
Cheesehead published a whole list of, some of them pretty strong criticisms, I would even say hateful criticisms, of Jobster and its CEO in particular. What should they do?
You know,
are you willing to stick your neck out on that?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. I think it would have been advantageous of Jason Goldberg to go ahead and respond to Cheesehead, not on the phone, but directly on the blog right up front, right away.
And say what?
And say, you know, I recognize that publications are going to, you know, continue to run the stories of you know, what happened back in December and January.
Mm-hmm.
But we did apologize. I pointed out what areas I could have improved upon. And we're really working hard here to move on, because while I feel bad about those people who were laid off back then, we do have a streamlined company now, and I have to think about the people who I have on the payroll now.
Okay, so in other words, he could say he kind of got religion, he's a nice guy now, and leave it at that? Because I got to tell you, that I don't know if everybody read it. I feel bad making it. Maybe I don't have to worry too much about making it more popular, but... One of the employees said that, you know, he yelled at this woman and told her that he was going to put a bullet through her head if she leaked some information. We don't know who it was. We don't know who left the report because it was anonymous. I got to tell you, when I read that, man, I said, that's pretty rotten. And then another woman who left her name, Jerry Golda, I published it on my blog today, she said, I was there. It wasn't as bad as this guy made it out to be. And not only that, but he sincerely apologized later on to completely different views of the same incident. Should he have addressed that one? I mean, because that's not, you know, like an event. That's about him. They made statements about his ongoing character and attached that to the fate of the company.
Right. Well, actually, you almost have to roll it all the way back and how that character got to become developed. And that came through, you know, a series of events that has demonstrated one time after another that he's mismanaging his own message. His message, and unfortunately, it's gained traction to stick to Jobster, which is really detrimental for the company.
Sorry, I'm missing what you're saying.
Well, the whole layoff incident, kind of, you know, from my understanding of it, and I could be off of a little bit. Sure, there were some critics on Jobster when they first launched, but to some degree, people had a lot of admiration for him, and Jobster, which is why you saw the company come up.
Mm-hmm.
Into the attention of literally everybody. What happened during the layoffs is that's when people started to say, hey, maybe he's not the knight in shining armor that he's painted himself to be. And I believe that any time that you have a message out there that sort of contradicts who you really are, you know, where maybe it's smoke, that's what's going to come crashing down on you. The way that layoffs were handled said, hey, this isn't the knight in shining armor that we thought. He's really, you know, an evil dictator or something of that effect.
Yeah, that's what it comes out as. You're right.
That's the way it came out. And now everything that he does that reinforces that message, whether it's putting a bullet through somebody's head or, you know, if they leak information or whatever the case may be, it just reinforces that message that's already been put on the table because he didn't diffuse that message really enough. You know, I said how he should respond to Cheesehead now, but really, he should have apologized much sooner. In fact, I don't think he apologized until after New York Times got a hold of the piece and painted him of the poster child of bad CEO blogs. That's when he apologized. He should have apologized much earlier.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Let's see what everybody else has to say. Anybody got a comment on that or would like to raise another issue? I'm a bit tired today. I'm not doing a great job myself. I know I have some listeners there. We'll give them 5 seconds, then we'll move on. Because I have other questions if they don't. I came prepared this time.
Good.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question. We'll move from Jason, although I think we're going to go back to him, to Borat. Apparently, he's been used as a great example of this. Is Borat good for Kazakhstan?
Well, it put the country on the map.
Yeah, well, okay, so let me ask you that. Wouldn't that say all publicity is good publicity?
No, some publicity is good publicity. You know, I recently posted something about a couple good publicity examples, one of which was a giant chocolate billboard that was put up in London.
Yeah.
Good publicity. The April Fool's joke with the whole, you know, Gmail paper concept from Google.
Yeah.
Great publicity. Got a lot of traction.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, I have to say that, you know, one of the people that they created for the testimonial has generated so much interest. Every day there's at least 10, 15 people who come to the site looking to find out if that's a real company. My site, because I had posted about that.
Yeah, because you used that.
It's awesome. You know, that's a great use of publicity. There was a casino.
But look, I got to tell you, hold on. Who knew about Jobster before this? And then it was in, maybe all the people in the industry actually knew. But to get in the New York Times, I mean, I was reading some, I did some background reading for this show, and some of the people say, you know, publicity is visibility, and that's the end of the story, most of the time. I mean, O.J.'s publicity wasn't very good for him, acknowledged, or even Michael Jackson's wasn't good. But apparently, if you get a bad review, if you write a book and get a bad review, you'll still get more readers than if you get no review at all.
Not necessarily true. And you look at, like, Mel Gibson, that, you know, his publicity had a direct negative impact on his movie.
Which
Tom
movie?
Cruise publicity had
which
a direct negative impact
movie?
On his movie.
The Passion?
No, the one.
Successful Apocalypto?
That did take people aback. And that was, and every time that you saw a story about his movie, you saw a story about Mel. It was just reinforced that, you know, maybe this guy doesn't like some people.
Uh-huh.
Maybe he's not the kind, gentle person who did pass into the Christ for a more worthwhile purpose.
You know what? I don't know about that. I also read about, you know, the Mark Foley scandal. The guy, there was he a congressman flirting with the pages, essentially?
Uh-huh.
Apparently his career hasn't gone anywhere good as a result of it. But the Page program, which was apparently quite listless, lots of popularity now just because people found out about it. Bad publicity. I mean, who wants to send your kids somewhere where this guy's trying to, let's say, molest them or something or seduce them? Didn't have the bad effect. Also, look at Kate Moss. Her, you know, coke habit didn't hurt her at all.
Or look at the Walmart scandal. There's a lot of people hurt there.
Okay.
Draft S.
Maybe you should give some background. Some people
okay.
don't know.
Gosh, back in July, the vice president of marketing, her name's Julie Rome, was starting to sort of, you know, make a splash in the industry. She had moved over from Chrysler. By December, she was starting to do some things that Walmart would consider unethical and ended up terminating her. Draft SCB was the agency that she had hired to start doing work for Walmart because they had this grand vision of taking Walmart to the next level where they could sell high-quality goods to the public as well as their low-cost goods.
Okay.
Because of some of the ethical mistakes that she made, she was terminated. And, you know, that raised a lot of red flags. The agency ended up losing the account 100%.
Uh-huh.
Now, just a couple months ago, Julie was back in the news because she was suing Walmart for wrongful termination, which was a complete contradiction to how she had left the company. You know, according to her, she said, hey, that's okay. They don't like my progressive brand of marketing, and I think I'll, you know, I'm moving on, and I have a lot of friends there, and it's all good. Well, she changed that message with the lawsuit. And that's created a lot of problems for literally everybody. I think the person in the best shape right now is probably Walmart because their public relations generally outweighs their publicity.
What does that mean?
As far as the... meaning they have a really strong connection. You know, I think people get really confused in the terms that, we as communicators throw out. Public relations is the relationship, the simplest definition is, it's the relationship you have with many publics, whether it be your customers or people within your industry or your shareholders. Walmart really is not impacted by all the negative publicity that it receives, which is largely a media relations problem. You know, people are always writing bad things about Walmart.
Yeah.
But it doesn't impact them.
They're wrecking
really.
All the small towns of America. That's the first thing that comes to mind.
That's the first thing that comes to mind. I mean, that message is stuck, you know. But yet, even in those small towns in America that they're supposedly wrecking, you know, they have customers coming in the door every day that love them. They love them. Now, at the agency, they've lost two more accounts that allegedly are directly related to the whole Walmart scandal.
So hold on, let me just interrupt
and
you for a second.
Shame.
Let me interrupt. It looks to me like if you're part of a disaster, but you're not the key part of the disaster, it's okay for you. Like Walmart, you're saying that, you know, she's contradicting herself, so she's really the screw up here. And Walmart is sort of like got caught up in it, and yet it just keeps them even more front and center than usual. Or the Mark Foley scandal. This guy went down, but the people associated with him, like this Page program, they rose in the public esteem. Is that, or at least invisibility and curiosity. So is that, I mean, it's not a bad thing to be part of a disaster as long as you're not the eye of the hurricane?
What it comes down to is how do you handle yourself during a crisis? You know, it's okay to make mistakes in business, and it's okay to have something not work out the way you want it to. It's okay, you know, I suggest that you try to avoid it, but if you do something that's just generally a terrible thing to do, it's not even so much the thing that you did is how you handle the situation after the fact that people will judge you by.
Okay, so I don't know. Maybe you've got an example, but I'm starting to think.
That's what happened with Jobster. It wasn't the layoffs. The Jobster's layoffs is something that happens in America every single day.
Yeah.
You know, house values had layoffs. They're not in the news 3 months later.
Yeah.
They're not in the New York Times saying that they're an evil company.
Yeah.
Or run by a guy who puts, you know, is armed and dangerous.
Uh-huh.
They had message management. They handled their layoffs in a manner that was very suited to them.
So what do you mean by when you say message management?
You know, every company has you have different messages that you can have put out to the company. Sometimes other people will try to put messages on you, as in the case with Jobster. Message management is making sure that the messages you want out in the public are far and away exceeding the messages that anybody else could create about you. It's about defining yourself and who you are.
Uh-huh.
You
okay.
Know.
I mean, but how do you do that? I mean, so especially, I just want to bring it back to it. How does this relate to us perhaps as recruiters, either a small recruiting firm or, you know, perhaps a big one as well? Does it have any specific relation to what we do or, to, you know, to our blogging, or are we just talking about business in general here?
I could pull it in recruiting in terms of blogging. I mean, each case scenario is different.
Uh-huh.
If I can use you as an example.
Okay.
your brand, in a sense, the messages that you've put out, is very well suited for publicity.
Uh-huh.
If you did something outrageous, nobody would be shocked by that. You've sort of exempted yourself from your outrageousness. I think that's awesome. I think it works for a lot of people. I think in Jobster's case, they painted themselves as very serious, you know, to a degree. You know, there's a little bit of funness to them, but he needed to roll that back in a time of crisis. If you had a crisis animal, you might have to change your message temporarily and then go back to your original message. And that's not – Jobster didn't do that. They had no message control.
Well, what's his name had a crazy message, too? Imus, right? And so he went a little too far. And now he's in big trouble. So what's going to happen with him? I don't know if everyone knows, he was joking around with a guy on the radio about a woman's basketball team, and he made a racial slur. And then he had to go on the Al Sharpton show and apologize, and Al said, I don't care if you're the nicest guy in the world, you should be fired. So how's he going to bounce back from that?
He's not handling that correctly at all. You know, he had the wrong choice of words, and he could say that, but at the same time, he could have instead of going to the apology route, which is the trend nowadays, I think apologies are starting to wear off because of this. You know, it's like, okay, I did a bad thing. I'm sorry. That's the, you know, and now maybe I need to go into rehab, right? That's what celebrities do.
Yeah.
Well, there's
what they say they're drunk. I didn't figure that if you make a racial comment, well, can you just say you're drunk? Is that what happens?
No, yeah. Well, that's what some of them do. I mean, that's, you know, Rosie O'Donnell comes out and she says outrageous things all the time and then talks about the fact that she's on depression medication.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that. Okay.
Yeah. See, I'm suffering from major depression. I have that's her explanation.
You hear that, everybody? There you go.
I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
The Prozac is going to help you.
It's but at the same time, if you are presenting yourself in such a way that you are outrageous or you are out there, then people start to, you know, expect that, and they're not fazed by it. Paris Hilton could do just about anything, and nobody's really fazed by it. But yet, she's actually very smart in how she brands herself. She's a very smart person when it comes to branding and what her message is and who she's about.
And you think she does it herself? I mean,
when people get in trouble is when people really get in trouble.
Yeah.
Is when they present themselves in such a manner that it contradicts the reality of who they are.
You know what? I remember, like, H.L. Mencken, famous American journalist, he had that contrarian reputation, right? He was always saying smart, snarky things.
Right.
You're aware of that? And then he got in a lot of trouble for, again, a racial comment. It wasn't that bad, to tell you the truth. It was about a cigar. I don't know if you remember that. I don't want to get in trouble myself, so I won't repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it hurt him, even though he had a reputation as a contrarian and as a jokester, he went too far. And I don't think you're safe even if you have a reputation as being kind of zany or, you know.
Exactly. You have different degrees. It's not black or white. It's not
okay.
If you're zany or not zany. There's a whole bunch of different degrees. You know,
okay.
If you started making racial comments on your show,
yeah.
You would probably get a lot of publicity but a lot of backlash for it, and there'd be a lot of pressure put on you.
And then like that Sparrow guy, after that, when Sparrow, what was his name, Sparrow? Is that the guy who made the thing about the talk radio show? The blogger?
Spocko.
Spocko?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but then,
as in once, Mr. Spocko.
If you're really a nobody, even though you get your moment, it's over then, right? You're just back to being who you were before. I mean,
Often. You know, there's some really good American Idol examples right now that...
I know you love that show.
Barbara. Now, she was somebody who said, hey, I can sing, and even though she really couldn't. And she had these pictures come out, and that's what people identify with her now. That's her brand. She could easily get a job if she was willing to take off her clothes. She will likely never get a job as a singer. Meanwhile, there was another Idol contestant, and her name escapes me, on the same show, who left American Idol and actually put some suggestive photos on her MySpace page, and bang, she's generating traffic and nobody's saying hateful things about her.
Hey,
what's the difference? The difference is one is managed and one's not managed.
Okay.
Anybody can, you know, get undressed and run across a parking lot to get publicity. You'll make the news. But what is it going to say about you and what is it going to say about your message? I mean, it takes, you have to manage your message. It takes like 80... I think the figure is 80 impressions before a message even starts to stick. I'd have to tell you something 80 times before it really starts to stick.
Uh-huh.
Can I really afford to have that be the wrong message?
Okay, you know what? I keep trying to bring this down to my own level, how I can use this information in my daily business. Okay, but somebody, I got a couple of people, they don't want to talk. I mean, there's lots of people called in, okay, but they're not saying anything. But I am getting more.
Interrupt?
Pardon me?
Yeah,
you can interrupt, but I have a question now. Somebody's asking me a question from the IM. They want to know, what about the Dixie Chicks? I'm not that interested in the Dixie Chicks, but if you are, go ahead, shoot.
The Dixie Chicks did have a negative impact on their album sales because
yes.
They presented themselves as all-American girls, and that was the appeal. They're young, attractive, all-American girls who were very patriotic. That was part of the appeal. And then they said some things that were contrary to the image that they had portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, when you have messages that don't line up, that's when you start to have public relation nightmares.
I'm going to interrupt.
Go ahead.
Those images are not just contradictory. They're offensive to the person who's listening to them. Like, if you are a good girl and then all of a sudden you appear as a bad girl, who you know, maybe some, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe people are willing to accept a bad girl and a good girl, but not in the same person. I don't know. But they said things about George Bush that most of their audience, country audience, didn't like. So it wasn't just contradictory. It was offensive. So isn't that more to the point?
That's fine. That's a fine way to put it too. It was offensive to their publics. It was a bad public relations, management. They totally neglected their public and actually said something that would offend them.
Okay.
Exactly.
I think there's another step here.
And Dave Bannister?
Yes.
Okay. Finally, I recognize it. You're not after that money now, right? I put it in the. Go ahead.
We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
I think there's another step here that should be addressed, that it's kind of knowing what your message is before you can shape it. A lot of the things you guys are talking about right now are crisis communications.
Mm-hmm.
There's a problem. You're not out there crafting your own message. You're in a very reactive mode to things that are going on around you. Imus slips up and says something racist on the radio, and all of a sudden he's the center of news. How does he react to that? The Dixie Chicks say something about the president. Their fans react negatively. How do they react to that? But on a more day-to-day basis, for most recruiters, most companies in general, they're not always in a state of crisis. There's really more of an identification of what their message is and what their end goals are and how they need to communicate those things.
Sorry, I didn't understand.
Yes.
Than what you're talking about.
That's an excellent point. I do.
Hold on. He said, but we're talking here about sort of crisis management and publicity. And Dave was just saying that doesn't relate to, or let me relate to our daily lives as recruiters or recruiting related companies. Is that what you said?
Crises are few and far between for
uh-huh.
most people,
mm-hmm.
and 99% of the communications management that a recruiter will be doing will not be of a crisis nature. It will be more shaping their professional image.
Okay, so Richard, you take over.
No, it's an excellent point. I think that's generally why companies get into trouble is they don't have a very good message about who they are to begin with. And that you need that first. In fact, if you have that and then you are faced with a crisis, chances are you will succeed. If you go back to your original message about who you are. If you start to fall into the trap of reinforcing the incident or the crisis message, then that becomes who you are. So I guess the nut and bolts of it is, if you don't manage your message, then your message will start managing you. And I think that's what happened to Jobster. I think that's potentially what could happen to JetBlue.
Okay, but you said these guys had a message before the problem, right?
Which?
Like Jobster, for instance, you said they had a message. You said they were serious. They did have an image that they were crafting, and
yeah.
then they contradicted that, or Jason contradicted it, and the problem came in there, and they should have, I don't know if it's revert back to image or what. Sorry, I'm going off track, so go ahead.
No, I don't. I think since the incident happened, I could be wrong, and somebody could easily disagree with me. I don't think that they've really solidified who they are since that incident. It had such a big role in the evolution of their company that they're having a hard time getting that back. Now it seems that they're sort of in a mode of we're going to continually launch new projects, and I hope that it comes out sort of that maybe people will begin to think we're innovative. That's what I'm getting from their communication right now.
Uh-huh.
I've lost who Jobster was meant to be initially, and I think other people have too, and that's why you continually see negative messaging put on them from different people.
Okay. Is Dave Manister still there?
Hello.
Dave Manister, are you still there?
I'm here.
Listen, so you have opinions about communications management. You run a highly public company, at least in our business. Do you have a policy that you practice on a day-to-day basis that you could tell us about?
We're a pretty small company, so we don't have any policies in place about communications. We regularly talk amongst ourselves about what's going on, what's being said about us as an organization. And part of how we address those things is, A, assessing how accurate they are, Do they have a good point about us? You know, is it something we should be changing about ourselves, our behavior, our product lines?
Mm-hmm.
And B, if they're inaccurate, how do we go about correcting what they're saying about us?
Okay,
but
sounds to me like the issue is, although you're a small company, you are very public. It's not just like a recruiting firm. Who do I deal with? I deal with my individual clients. So there's really not a lot of people talking about me, so I don't have to address that public relations issue, I don't think. If there's an error that I have to apologize for or rectify, it's between myself and probably a specific hiring manager. So I'm thinking, while you're talking, I'm saying to myself, well, maybe in smaller firms, you know, like, say, a 1-to-10-person recruiting firm, you really don't have this communications management issue. Is that fair, Richard, that the communications management is really a big company issue?
No.
They have a high visibility and lots of people are talking about them? And
no, I disagree. I think communication management can work all the way down to the individual level.
I would agree with that as well.
Oh, go ahead. Somebody give me an example then.
I think for a recruiter, you have to focus on who your constituency is. If you're a company of some size like Jobster, you can define your constituency as all recruiters everywhere in the world. If you are a recruiter, maybe one that specializes in the nursing profession, you should be defining your constituency as all of the nurses, say, in Seattle. You know, it's like I want to have my reputation with the nurses in Seattle to be sterling.
Uh-huh.
I want them, when they think about, you know, who to go to for their next position, I want them to call me before they call anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your objective, and you want to be the trusted source of career information or, you know, where they go for their next job. And that is an objective that you can manage through your communication.
And if someone goes to a blog and puts up, you know, I was dealing with Michael Kellerman, who doesn't recruit nurses in Seattle, by the way, and says that, I wasn't satisfied with him. He really didn't understand anything about nurses. He might have been good at finding me, but, you know, once I had a conversation with him, I didn't feel he understood me well. So how would you go about dealing with that on a blog, for instance?
I don't know much about the profession and how to do that. I didn't mean the communications profession. I meant the specifics of the nursing profession.
Mm-hmm.
But I would look for some way to demonstrate, you know, my abilities, my knowledge, you know, just to somehow prove that wrong.
Richard?
We have a great example. You and I do, Animal, and that would be that's kind of how we were introduced. I was working on a series of posts, sort of a living case study on Jobster in their crisis communication situation. Somebody else had sent out a release trying to take advantage of that situation, and I wrote about that. You did not agree with me. You posted on your blog, and had I just left it go, feasibly it could have impacted my own credibility. It didn't bother me. So what I did is I simply, you know, I saw that, I recognized, I read your post, I got to understand who you were a little bit, and I said, hey, you know, I could look at this one of two ways. Either this guy is a nasty, hateful person who writes smack about people every day, or he's actually a pretty bright guy with a great sense of humor. And I found out the latter to be true, even though I'm sure you'll disagree with that. But I said, hey, you know, I can easily respond here and kind of put this into context and tell him, you know, this is what I was thinking. I responded to your post, and I think that was the start of a relationship that we could craft and end up working together on recruitingbloggers.com.
You know what? What your point makes an important issue. Like being criticized, for instance, if you're dealing with a nurse and she legitimately criticizes you, it doesn't mean she doesn't respect you. It's another thing to say this guy's useless, because then, you know, there's an element of contempt or just dismissing the person as a whole. I read your stuff. I kind of think that you know, everybody hates that monster video that Don Jaco did. I liked it. I thought it was hilarious. Now maybe I, you know, giving him some credit for being funny when he wasn't really, but I thought there was an element of humor there. And I read online that there's sort of something called an out there personality. Jason Calacanis, another famous blogger, has it as well. These are kind of extroverts who they want to be authentic. It includes, you know, when they rant about Jason Calacanis rants about SEO. He said it's meaningless. you know, stuff like that. That really, that's a lot of people. That's their business, right? But he can do that. And when someone does that kind of thing, I think they're very lively. You can fault them for what they're saying, but not the way they say it necessarily. So,
I think Jason Goldberg could do that. I think he could continue to do that. I think his timing was off, and I think he shouldn't have tied in what's on his iPod because that was directly related to the layoffs. Otherwise,
what, you mean the songs?
Yeah, you know, he said, even in the video, he says, you know, you can read about what's on my iPod, and he is criticized for that because all the iPod music was, you know, a hint at the layoffs.
Yeah.
Which made it sort of in bad taste. But in general, if he wants to be the extrovert, he can do that. You know, when you first invited me to participate on recruitingbloggers.com, you know,
that's the thing. I respected you. I just didn't agree with you.
Well, and that's fine. I think that's great. I think that's what makes us, you know, if we all work toward a mutual understanding, at least we can, even if we don't agree, we can see why we don't agree, right? In Goldberg's case, I think he had a real opportunity to, after the crisis was handled, to start being the extrovert once again. But even when I came to recruitingbloggers.com, he engaged me and said he was going to call me out in a big show, and that was the character that people knew before. But then when I called him on it and said, okay, if you want to have a conversation with me on recruitingbloggers.com, that's fine. Let's do it. And then he didn't.
Yeah, but
and then
you know
he
what?
Didn't.
That recruitingbloggers.com, it's kind of insignificant, isn't it? I mean, nobody finds out about that, really.
Well, people have found out about it.
Oh, okay.
On Blog Pulse, you know, if you kind of line up the dates, you'll find out that had just as that comment of that exchange between him and I had just as much traction as any news that he releases.
Okay, so when you're in the media, you track things according to the dates and you graph it according to.
Sometimes, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, now I'm seeing on my screen here that the switchboard page is showing me a blank. Now there's people saying, "Can I butt in?" If anybody's still there, aside from you, Richard, they're welcome to chime in.
I'm
Emmy,
here.
Are you still there, Emmy?
Yeah,
no,
yes, I am.
Larry.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, okay. Emmy's been bugging me, Larry. So first Emmy, then Larry.
Nah, forget it.
Yeah.
Well, actually, first and foremost, I want you to know that I tried to interrupt several times but realized I was on mute. So I guess that's
yeah, okay.
I guess that talks to some of what Richard was talking about in terms of proper communication strategy. But it occurs to me as we're talking about all of these things, there are a lot of different concepts which in of themselves are quite important and topical, but which we're kind of like throwing into a salad bowl and then trying to pick pieces out and make sense of it. You know, to David Manister's point, I think he probably makes the most valuable observation in recognizing that the vast majority of companies don't have the types of crisis that we're talking about managing through our communications in the context that Richard is. And I think also the point that he makes that most intelligent organizations proactively manage their communication strategy, recognizing that they have certain constituencies that they want to communicate a certain message to. But to come back and without focusing on
yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, go ahead. What's your point?
That's okay. When you play the tape back, Michael, yeah. It might make some sense.
I never listened to them again.
So to come back, you know, to some of Richard's points, it kind of occurs to me that we could distill this and make this really, really rather simple. There used to be an old adage, I think, if you weren't happy to read about it on tomorrow's newspaper, you shouldn't say it.
Yeah.
Is that something that everybody's familiar with?
Yes.
And it also occurs to me that we could even apply similar simple tests to what we do and what we say and how we do it. And it occurs to me that if we can maintain a level of honesty and integrity and truth in what it is that we say and how it is that we say it, whatever position we then adopt somehow becomes much more easy to defend because...
Hey, I'm having trouble. What are you talking? Hey, Richard, do you know what he's saying?
Yeah, I do, and it's actually an excellent point. I mean, I'd underscore it. You should listen
what
to
the
tape
say?
Back.
I mean, what did you say? You tell me what he said. Go ahead.
He's basically saying, well, you know, he's a very extremely large fan of transparency, and I embrace that wholeheartedly. Maybe not to the level he does. He's basically saying if we operate as good people who are trying to become a positive influence on wherever we are, we're going to reap the rewards, and people are going to embrace us for who we are. But we have to be mindful of what we say. You know, we just can't run around and say derogatory things about people that are unsubstantiated, or we have to really consider what the results of anything we do are.
You know, that's a high, you know, moral stand. It doesn't take place in real life.
Michael, let me ask you a question. If it is a high moral stand, why does that make it any less applicable in business today?
Most people, you know, you have to monitor everything you're doing and train yourself to have, you know, the right actions, et cetera, and the right speech, right actions, right thinking.
Isn't that kind of training and orientation what makes somebody superior at what they do as opposed to mediocre in what they do?
I don't know. As evidenced
by the mediocre performance, one could point to Jason Goldberg having executed with his brand management and his communication strategy.
First of all, Richard, let's talk about personalities. Different personality styles must choose different communication styles as well. And just like you said, you know, if someone's an extrovert, they say, oh, that's just so-and-so talking, right? We'll give them a little leeway because we don't take everything the person says seriously. Maybe they exaggerate a lot, okay? So I don't think that, first of all, when you talk about a person who, you know, says, you know, these guys are stealing money in public, it's his style. And you can't, you know, for someone to tame that style, you'd have to start with his parents. I don't know if they'd have any luck. And then maybe you'd have to get a guy like Richard in there with a whip, not letting them open their mouths, which is, you know, their strength probably as well. So, let Richard speak.
I work with some pretty colorful people. I mean, I also do political work, and there's no controlling a politician. I can tell you, I can promise you that. But what you can do is say, well, if you do this, we need to be prepared for the consequences. And if they're smart, they'll listen to at least that. And then if there's backlash, we can help them correct it. Sometimes that's just the way it is. But there's nothing. I want to be clear about this. There are different personality styles. There's nothing wrong with trying to be a beneficial presence in the world. There's nothing wrong with that. Secondly, there's different ways to do that, and you can infuse your own personality into that. There's a blog called Ad Rants that uses very colorful language and rips on people every day. It's a brilliant blog. He's not doing it to be a negative sourpuss. He's doing it to actually better people and change their perspective and how they think about things so that maybe they can have better results. I try to do the same thing to some degree. You try to do the same thing on your blog. If you see a duck, you say, hey, it's a duck. And then people say, okay, that is a duck. That's why I originally became interested in Jobster, was after the first Jobster incidences, I saw some people coming out of the woodwork saying, this is the best communication example I can think of. I've never seen communication this good before. That was wrong. It was wrong, and I'd hate to see other companies adopt that style and have the same kind of negative results that Jobster faced.
You know what? I'll just say one thing about that, and I want to go to Larry. I think those problems that are on Cheesehead, really, I don't think they have that much to do with, you know, that incident in January where the timing of the message, et cetera, and the layoffs were screwed up. I just think, you know, some people don't like being laid off. Some people don't like Jason. And some people are confused about the company. But let's come back to that. Larry, you're on.
Publicity is good publicity.
What did you say?
Publicity. All publicity is good publicity.
Okay, defend that point
of view. One in business, become famous. Step one, become famous. All publicity is good publicity.
What about infamous? Become infamous.
I said become famous, so I don't know.
Yeah, but then you know what? Publicity can make you infamous as well, right?
Most of the time, that's what it'll do.
It's your behavior that makes you infamous, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you do that makes you infamous, not the publicity.
Well, that's a good point. That's what I was just going to say. What are you talking about? The publicity is good. It gets your name out there. People then have an idea of who you are. It's the biggest barrier for any business, any individual, is to become well-known. Once you're well-known, I can make commerce out of that. I can make money from that. But if you're anonymous, there's no money in that.
Yeah,
people have to be aware of you.
I have to
publicity.
Disagree.
Good. Good, good, good.
Okay, Richard, the guest is disagreeing with you. Go ahead.
That's okay. here's the difference, basically, between public relations and publicity, okay? One is a managed message where you're developing and nurturing your relationships with various publics that you want to target. Publicity, you know, a lot of times means you don't even have any publics and you're willing to do anything to get the exposure. That's a completely uncontrolled message, and you cannot dictate the outcome. You might as well roll the dice, because that's what you're doing every time that you embrace publicity as your only communication method.
So,
and you
hold
can
on.
See
that's
it, and
a
you
very
can see
subtle
it in the news
difference.
Every day.
Hey, so public relations
free.
And publicity.
What? Publicity is free. How about that?
So is public relations.
Take the amount of money it would cost you to buy that kind of name recognition, turn that into an actual dollar figure, and you've got a lot there. If there's a little bit of negative, what the heck? Publicity is great. This is great for the Imus show. This
nothing,
is great
nothing
publicity.
Big so.
Oh, so Dave Manister, big up. Dave?
No, nothing is free. If you're not paying for it, then you're paying for it with time and effort spent generating the publicity. There's no such thing as something that's completely costless.
Okay, I don't know. He just said it's sort of publicity is kind of accidental and out of control, right? Is that what you said?
You get interesting to the news people, and they write about you. You do something interesting, and you're photographed, and you're on TV. They call you up and they ask for a comment on a cable news show. I mean,
so let me ask
all
a question.
Very easy thing.
Can I ask? I want to ask a question.
I have to hold on. The judge. I want. So you hire a public relations guy, and what we usually think of, the public relations person is going to get you publicity. But Richard's defining publicity as something quite different. It's not visibility that you're generating. Is that right?
No, you are generating visibility, but the question is are you generating visibility on what you really want people to look at? And oftentimes when people generate publicity, they make people look at things that they don't really want looked at.
Okay, that's it. So
let me ask you a
what
question.
You're looking at.
You have to identify your goals as to why you are generating the publicity in the first place. What are you trying to get out of this? Who are you communicating with? What is your message? And we, as recruiting professionals or working in a professional services sphere, we're not looking for random publicity with no target. We want to come across as trusted individuals who people trust their careers to. And that's a very different thing than going out there and being Paris Hilton and saying, look at me, and then hoping that business comes from it.
Perfect.
Look at me. I kind of agree with Larry on that. If people look at me, then at least they'll know that maybe they want to do business with me. They'll have the choice. Let me shift
first. After they know who you are, then you can explain all this complicated explanations. They're giving you 10, 20, 30 seconds. They know who you are. You guys would, you use one example like a Paris Hilton, but there's just so many examples of people who have made great strides because they have publicity, free publicity. It's a great thing.
Okay. Let me shift for a second. What I want to bring it back to is the recruiters, but we're running out of time, so I wanted to ask Richard. Richard thinks that the recruiter sphere, the recruiting blogs, are kind of leading edge. He really compliments us a lot in his postings. I don't know if anyone has read those in particular. Can you tell us why?
I think it's, you know, having looked at a lot of different blogs in a lot of different industries, it seems to me, from what I've seen, is that you have a great foundation. You actually have an existing blog network of people who sort of work together to help develop social media. When I compare that to my own industry in communication, it seems that you're several steps ahead in recruiting as opposed to communication, which I've always found troubling.
What do you mean exactly? We're ahead in what way? And then you have to also ask how come you guys are behind. But I'm just curious, what way are we ahead?
And you already appreciate that social media can be used as a tool. And generally, it's one facet of a tool because I think it can be used for a lot of things. But it seems to me that the recruiting industry, by and large, or at least a percentage of you, have really utilized the social media tool as an excellent way to gain exposure, to put out your messages, to share your different styles of who you are, It's really helped define who you are.
So you mean there's a lot of recruiters creating blogs, active blogs. Is that specifically? Can you make it specific?
Well, there's a core group, and as a result, I think you've become sort of industry leaders because of your visibility, not through publicity, but through maybe unmanaged public relations. You've really developed it, and you operate together. You know, I watch the interaction between the blogs, and everybody does. You know, occasionally there's some dragging down, some people might say. But overall, I think you're really elevating sort of a platform. In a way, you have a professional organization at work, even though you don't have it under the banner of a professional organization. I think that's really admirable.
It's like an unorganization.
Yeah, you're an unorganization, that's right.
Anybody want to comment on that before I ask them the next question? Nope? Okay, so how come communication guys? Pardon me?
I said you guys. I mean, I can't figure out what it's so hard to figure this thing out. To me, how can you argue with being well known? How can you argue with the value of that? And using any example that you can name outside of a criminal, and even they have made careers out of their criminality because they were well known. I mean, how can you argue?
Well,
did
OJ? You're going the wrong direction. We want to move on, but OJ, his career didn't really flourish after his publicity, right?
How much did he get as a book?
Right.
Did he get on that book, buddy?
Pardon me?
How much of an advance did he get on that book?
I don't know. Which book? The one that was canceled?
Yeah.
But look at his whole life. I mean, that's a blip. Let me just see. J.D. Jason Davis is trying to speak. Let's see if we can hear him, because I think there's a problem with the phone right now. I don't want to try to refresh it, because I might cut everybody off. We're coming near the end. Jason, can you say something? I don't hear him, so I guess it's just the four of us at this point. I think O.J.'s career went into the toilet. He's lucky he's still free. And you know, he might have, you know, I got to tell you, he's going to be known in history in sort of a strategic way, but as notorious. Right now it's too big. I want to go on to something else. Communications guys, and I'm only really interested in them to see how it relates to us in the recruiter sphere. How are communications bloggers different, and why would they be behind guys like us? I know there's a lot of marketing blogs out there, so maybe you don't include marketing communications as part of this territory you're saying is a bit backwards.
No, I could. It seems to me that, and this is very generalistic, it seems to me that there's almost been two camps developed when it comes to social media. There's those that embrace it to the point where they push it and they're blowing up and forgetting everything that they know about traditional communication and strategic communication that's extremely important. And they're tracking with things that I don't necessarily see equate to any tangible results, like click-throughs.
Yeah.
And then there's the other camp, which is more traditional media based or traditional communication based, where they are focused on strategic communication, and they just don't seem to get the whole social media thing. They're still asking, what's a blog? If you don't know what a blog is today and you work in communication, I think there's a problem.
Okay, so you're not talking about the marketing guys when you're talking about communications.
It could be anybody.
Well, there's tons of marketing blogs. If you put in, is there such a thing, is all publicity good publicity? If you Google that, you'll get a lot of blogs discussing it. And they seem to be mainly marketing people. So I know communications is a much broader territory than just marketing. There's internal communications, there's media relations, public relations, and then there's marketing that supports sales specifically, I think. Would it be fair to segment them like that and say that some areas like marketing are just as advanced or more advanced than the recruiters, and then these other areas are behind?
No, I think marketing tends to not in every case, mind you, but they tend to miss a lot of the strategic elements that strategic communicators know and practice on a daily basis. And the reason I think that the strategic communicators, even though they haven't embraced social media, tend to be a little bit more successful, is because they don't just consider one avenue. They don't just look at it and say, internal communications, media relations, crisis communications, external relations. They don't look at that. It's all under one giant umbrella. And if you ask a strategic communicator, they'll tell you it's under their umbrella. Ironically, in my industry, if you ask any of the subsections of industries who's at the top, they almost will always say they are. So marketing will say we should be at the top, and advertising should say we're at the top. Internal communications should say they say we're at the top. Really, I think we've become a real fragmented industry with a lot of people who know a little bit about a lot of things. But the truth is, if your communication isn't integrated, you're sending out messages that might not even be in alignment, and who knows what people are going to conclude.
You know what? This is a whole new topic, and I kind of wish we would have got into it before, because you did talk about strategic communications. If anybody wants to take a look at the Recruiting Animal, one of the recent postings, Mustache Primer, I tried to condense it, and you said I didn't do a bad job. So I think I have an idea what you're talking about. We're running out of time. I want to ask Jason's question. He just sent it to me by Messenger. But I'm also going to say, you know, we didn't even talk about employee branding and things like that, or employment branding. So if we have another session on that, I'd really like you to be, you know, part of a panel. I'm really just getting a feel for what you do or what you can comment on that's relevant for us. But you said when you were talking about recruiting blogs and making us feel great by telling us that we're way ahead of everybody else, you said within 3 years, these regular communications guys who don't know what a blog is, these strategic communications guys, I guess, who are responsible for core messages and things like that, that they're going to catch up with us, and they're going to make money on stuff we're doing for free. Can you elaborate about that? Of course, J.D. Jason Davis, thank you for thinking about the money angle. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. Well, we've seen it a couple times before. I'll just pick one out of the hat, and we saw that with websites is, you know, communication, advertising, marketing people, however you want to lump them together, pretty much dismissed websites on the front end. And so all these companies that said they specialized in website creation came into existence. And they were largely created by IT people who really believed in the web. Communicators didn't want anything to do with it. They didn't see a value. Then, when they started to see the value, they quickly rushed in and said, wait a minute, these IT people who are doing websites should be underneath us. Mm-hmm. And in that particular case, they got their way. But that's not always going to happen.
Okay, but how are they, when they catch on, you said they're gonna know how to monetize what we do right now.
Right, because they'll take all the, well, as far as, if they take over, what will happen is people who are blogging will start to answer to the vice president of corporate communications at larger companies.
Okay, so you mean a recruiter, for instance, who's part of a corporate blog?
Possibly, yeah.
But like,
if I was a communicator in a company with a blog that was run by a recruiter, mm-hmm. I'd want to have some accountability. I'd want there to be some accountability to my department. In some companies it happens, in some companies it doesn't. But I would want that because my goal would be to make sure that our messages that are going out are consistent across the board 100% of the time, from the individual on the front line all the way up to the CEO.
And how much freedom then? Again, this whole idea of constraint really bothers me. If a blogger, you know, wants to have fun, is he going to be looking over his shoulder at, let's say, the VP of marketing or communications or something like that?
No, I think in order to do that and to master that, if you develop what I call, and it's different from a lot of people, because a lot of people think I'm talking about key messages. I'm really not. What I call a core message,
yep,
which is the essence of your company, as dictated hopefully by your entire company, that everybody kind of agrees with, and you create that kind of context, and you keep hearing that message over and over internally and externally, it won't be an effort at all. It's not a constraint. You actually believe it. Some people are very good at it. I think Apple is extremely good at this. All their employees feel the same way about Apple as do all people who buy Apple products.
Uh-huh.
They're innovative. They're fun. They're a little quirky. They're going to create the next thing to take us into the future. That's their message internally and externally is in sync 100% of the time. There's no pressure. There's no effort to control, because it's not about controlling people. It's about controlling your message.
Yeah, but listen, Larry, I'll give you an example, and I'm going to go on longer than I wanted just because I'm starting to get it now, like what you can teach us. But, you know, Gretchen Lightgard was someone I think we all like and respect. She was one of the founders of the Microsoft Jobs blog. I'd say that's the most famous and successful recruiting blog, you know, that talks to people who want to work for Microsoft. And, you know, she said something one day there that, you know, was picked up by a technology, a big technology website, And she said, you know, the guys, whoever it was in the company there, she didn't feel she got their support. And she said, you know, I'm sticking my neck out every day, you know, because she says things that, you know, might not go over that well, whatever. And they didn't really give her the kind of support she really felt she needed when, you know, her message was picked up and maybe misinterpreted or, you know, given the wrong emphasis. So what's the relationship going to be between a communications guy like you and a recruiter who, you know, maybe says something that, you know, the company doesn't like 100%?
The best communication people are going to create a situation where they could work with somebody so that we just know, not to control the message, but just to say, hey, you know, if we have a clear understanding of what this company is about, then you don't necessarily have to talk about those specific points, but try to stay within that context.
You know what? I think she did. I mean, I have a lot of respect for her. I think she did a great job. And there was one case she complained about something in the company, which Scoble, I don't know, Robert Scoble, maybe you're familiar with him. He was famous for doing that. But she did it, and she felt like people soured on her as a result of that. I don't know if she overreacted, but I really felt bad. I thought, what a mistake they made. And what I'm saying is that even when people go off message, maybe you have to give them, you know, some leeway and say you're still doing a great job. You know, you're not going to be working within, you know, the boundaries all the time. I just feel that.
Well, yeah, I don't want to be, you know, misunderstood either. I mean, there's extremes, and I think that's the other thing that happens sometimes is people don't generally deal with extremes. Like some people will say, you know, in fact, they use it in politics a lot, right? You have to stay on message is what they'll say. But then you listen to some politicians, and every single answer is the same line in a different way. That's too much on message. I mean, you have to be honest and open. You know, what true core messaging does is give you a framework or a context to say, okay, I know who I am in my relationship to my company that does X, and that's something I just need to be mindful of when I'm talking. That's all.
I don't know. That mindfulness makes me kind of nervous because there's always going to be someone with a trigger finger. So, you know what? I'm going to wrap up now. Anybody with a final prediction or quick statement who's still on the line? Amy?
Well, I'm listening to the conversation, and it occurs to me that you know, some of the things that Richard says have great importance, but I think there's a distinction to be made between what an individual blogger communicates on his own personal platform and the responsibility that individual blogger has when serving a corporation. The audience is different.
Who's that? Okay.
That's true. That's true. Thank you for that.
Dave Manister, still there? Dave Manister?
Right here. Sorry.
Okay. Got a final comment?
Yeah, I think Richard is a great guest, and you should have him back.
You know what? I really think we should do as well. I gotta tell you, I really feel slow today, and I just feel like as we're talking now, I'm getting all kinds of avenues that we could explore with him if he's interested. I just think he knows a lot for us because we're really, I don't know. I don't want to speak for you, Dave. You're in a communications company, but I'm a real amateur, and I think a lot of us are as well. He's, you know, telling us not everything I want to hear, but how to do it from a professional point of view. So, Larry, are you still there? Larry Houghton, I can tell you what he's going to say. All publicity is good publicity.
Don't end on that.
Okay,
I'll give you a final statement. I'll give you a different end. If you live only by publicity, you will likely die by publicity.
Okay, so we'll leave that as a mystery, okay, for the next time. But you
okay.
Will come. Will you come back on?
I'd love to, Animal.
Okay, great. Thank you. And the guests, thank you very much. Talk to everybody later. Bye-bye.